And we are live just about 1 minute after the hour and a little bit late. Let me readjust the mic here. It's not quite where it should be for proper audio. It is a Monday. It is episode 3608. And today's episode is called 2025. Is it a shit show already? And it is, yeah. And we're going to talk about some of the things that make 2025 a shit show. I actually have some good things for you guys today, too. I'm not really going to run through a laundry list of what we're going to talk about because I've got a long list and that will just make the show longer. But I'll give you some basic stuff. We're going to talk about Trump. We'll give you a few highlights. One will be we'll talk about Trump. Now I'm going to tell a story some of you have heard before, some of you haven't. I have proof of it from the Internet Archive, from a now defunct blog that I used to run back in the day, right, back in the early 2000s. That was actually a very popular blog at the time called ComTech News. Why I know Trump as well as I do. I actually know Trump better than I care to admit, given some of the recent stuff. But I can tell you exactly what's going on with Canada, Greenland, Panama. And none of it is what it looks like on the surface at all. And some people will think I'm carrying laundry for the orange man when I say this. I'm not. I'm just telling you what I know about Trump. I'll tell you why I know what I know about Trump. And I'll tell you how Trump thinks. And if you don't believe that, there's a book you can read. It's called The Art of the Deal. And this is straight out of it. This is like textbook. I'm going to do some gun pull stuff from Twitter, X. We're going to talk about the California wildfires. Jamie Dimon's comments on Bitcoin is proof that Bitcoin has intrinsic value when he says it doesn't. Zuckerberg is all of a sudden for free speech, and that's all bullshit. We'll talk about maybe some more damage that Brandon can do on the way out the door. I got a little story about how to catch lizards, a response that I did to Jim Shockey on social media. And we'll talk about a thing right at the end called Toyota's new city project. It's called Woven City. It's at the base of Mount Fuji in Japan. What it is and what good and what evil may come forth from it. Before we talk about all that and a bunch more today, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day, number one today, Anton's Land of Biltong. I think this week is my week for my shipment of Biltong and Drew Wars. I hope so. I definitely encourage you to give Anton's Biltong a chance. You can get a discount on it if you're an MSB member. That's another great reason to be an MSB member. I just put an order in with the Cura Botanicals as a side note this weekend. It was $48 in discount from the Cura Botanicals. And my membership's $50 a year. That kind of makes it a no-brainer if you want to help support the show. But anyway, Anton's Land of Biltong, try his Biltong. It's amazing. Try the sticks. And I'll give you a hack with the sticks. The sticks are little thin pieces of the dried meat, and they're much harder. And I take a pair of shears and I clip them in like small bite-sized pieces. I just find it more pleasing to eat that way. But it's like a meat potato chip with the flavors of like coriander and Worcestershire. It's awesome. But also the sausages, the dry sausages. The Drew Wars are one of my favorites, but also the Calabanazi. Check that stuff out. The Calabanazi is really more of a Mediterranean style, kind of Italian Greek fermented sausage, and what I like about it, you really get the taste, that funk of the fermentation in it. Check those out. Next up today, Joel Riles with Canine Academy, which is kind of I guess you'd call it like a division or a revenue stream within Fortress Canine. Of course, Joel trains some of the best dogs you'll ever see at Fortress Canine, but some people aren't going to go out and buy a dog that's been fully trained for 2 years as a protection animal. Some people want one, but they can't afford one. Some people just want their dog to like not jump on their friends and not eat their chickens and stuff like that. Just want to train a really great dog. And if that's you, you want to check out Canine Academy at canineacademy.us. Just a great lineup of courses that you can take there. Fantastic way to train yourself to be better at training your dog. And you can learn more about it there. And if you want to go like, is this right for me? Is this what I should be doing? Will Joel's methods work for me? Am I going to like the way Joel teaches? Well, a little piece of advice for you then. Get on over to canineacademy.us. Do it right now. It's free. Go there and go down and register on the site and sign up for the problem-solving library. Then you can take that basically free mini course, and you can see how Joel handles things. With that, let's go ahead and dig on into it. again, we got just tons of shit going on, right? And I'm going to go kind of faster than usual. You have only as much detail as I need in some of these stories. This one is probably have the most detail out of all of it because it has a backstory that goes all the way back to 2007 for me personally. And it's what's up with Canada, Greenland, and Panama and Trump. If you want to understand what Trump's doing right now, all you need to do is read his book, The Art of the Deal. Let me give you kind of like chapter and verse style, like textbook execution of The Art of the Deal. You go into a situation, you ask for something that is completely unreasonable, that is completely over the top, that's just totally more than anybody would ever expect that you would get. And then when you have counterproposals, all of a sudden what somebody would have been outraged by seems completely reasonable. And when you counterpropose, you're still on excess. And so you still have lots of room to give things up. And then whatever you settle on, you probably still won. Oh, and by the way, again, this is Trump's own words. If you did it right at the end of the negotiation, both sides are happy and neither side feels like they got taken advantage of. That's a good negotiation. That's a good trade. That's a good deal when both sides feel they got the value they were looking for out of the deal. And you want to do that even though you started off with this outlandish shit, because if you do so, that person, when that deal's over, will want to do another deal with you, and your second deal will be easier than your first. Okay? I really encourage you to consider reading The Art of the Deal, even if you hate Trump. I don't care if you voted for Barack Obama and you wanted Bernie Sanders, but you voted for Hillary, you voted for Biden twice. You still want to read the book because the guy's president of the United States now. He's going to be doing outlandish shit for another 4 years, so you might as well understand what's going on. Let me tell you how I know this is Trump and this is what he's doing. Some of you know this. I used to be a consultant for Donald Trump. But what many of you don't know is how that happened. So about 2006, I partnered with a gentleman named Neil Franklin. I was at a company that got bought out by a predatory company. And I knew Neil from some prior dealings, and I was able to just throw him some business like over the fence. Like, on my way out of here, man, you can have this automation contract for what these people are going to do to get rid of our customer service department, because one of his companies did customer service platforms. So I handed him that deal, and when I did, he surmised that I was unhappy and I was probably leaving. And he's like, well, what are you going to do? And I said, probably for the next year, I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to go home and play around with my internet stuff and make some money and figure out if I want to keep working, honestly. This is all, again, this is a few years before TSPC. In fact, I think when I first went to work with Neil was 2005. And I'd been there, obviously, a while then, and we kept spinning off new corporations and new companies underneath the one overriding company, which was Sirian Inc., which was a holding company for several other companies. And I decided that since I was doing all this marketing work internally and we were building a pretty good marketing department, that it would be advantageous just to simply make that entire marketing department into a company of its own and then basically have internal accounting take care of the expenses like it was a department, but we could also then sell services outside of the group. And Neil was open to this, but he said, right, what kind of customer can we get? And I said, I'll make you a deal. 1 week from today, I will walk in with a deal that involves Donald Trump. And not as some off-put thing like one of his companies that we have a contract for marketing, the company doesn't even exist yet, and I will get us that deal. And he said, right, I'll bet you a martini on that. I said, that's fine, we'll bet a martini, but if we get the deal, then I want the company. He goes, fine. I was already ready to do this, and I already was halfway in motion with it. At the time, I was actually a huge fan of Trump, not as a political fan, as a business person. To see someone who had made so many successes in spite of some failures and think, you know, this guy actually seems like he wants people to be successful. And I still believe that. I think he does. And so I had read Trump's books. I had studied deeply who and what he was all about. And I formulated a plan based on who Trump was and the kind of people that he would employ in his organizations. Would basically be, I would criticize the fuck out of him, and then they would ask me to fix the problem. If you know anything about Trump, you probably think that sounds insane. Like when somebody criticizes Trump, man, he hammers them. But not when it's valid criticism. So all the way back in the day, again, this is in 2007, and thank God for the Wayback Machine, right, the Internet Archive, because this is the only reason I can prove what I say, because this blog is long dead. But I had built a really successful blog back then called ComTech News. And this was the post I did. And again, I have a link in the show notes. If anybody doubts me out there, I know I have haters, you can go look it up. You can't fake an Internet Archive snapshot from 2007 today on the archive itself, okay? And the title of the blog post was Why Donald Trump Has a Blog That Sucks. And I went through this, and I basically tore his blog apart. I'm not going to read it or anything. But I also did some things. I did some tagging in it that used to actually work with, you know, trackbacks back then. People paid attention to that. And my goal was to get anybody in the Trump administration or Trump network to respond to me. And that worked. And I had two people respond to me. One was a gentleman named Joseph Katz, who was running this part of Trump's empire at the time. He was the head guy. And the other was a gentleman named Barry Lenson, who took this very personally. He was a copywriter for Trump's blog at the time. And both of them responded. And Katz was actually pretty open and said, you know, it hurts sometimes to hear what you have to say. Lenson lost his mind, told me I was delusional. And I already had in my kind of like template form a response to what I would get. I massaged it a little bit and I ripped apart his response. It was a very long response, but it was all based on metrics, split testing, marketing, fulfillment of the blank. Like, you're not getting anywhere with this blog and you have the Trump name and my blog kills your blog. And yet I'm just some random guy with a couple friends that do this blog together. Why are you losing to us with Trump's name? And then that went on for a while. And eventually, if you read through all this, you will see Katz, Joseph Katz, say, glad to see everyone is getting along now. Drop me an email at, and I removed his email from it so he wouldn't get spammed. And let me know a good time to reach out to you. I'll also try the email address from above. And this all went down in a matter of days. The deal I made with Neil was, so it wasn't really a week. I made the deal with Neil on a Thursday of the prior week, and on Friday of the next week, I walked in with a signed contract and said, well, you better get Jeff on the phone, and you better get this company set up, because we now have a customer that is no less than Donald Trump. This is all validated. You can validate every word of what I just said. Now, here's what you need to understand of why I even told you that story. It's not braggery. I could have told you that story 100 times over the past 16 and a half years of doing this podcast. I told you that story because I want you to trust me when I say I know what this motherfucker is doing. Okay? I have scientifically studied this man enough that I was able to go out and trash one of his websites and within a week close him as a customer. This takes a deep psychological understanding of what you're dealing with. There's no other way to explain that. Like, I don't know that anybody's ever pulling a brand in that big with a company that doesn't exist and literally founding the company with the biggest client you could have had at the time. Huge. And one of the things I wanted to kind of let you know about how I was able to do this, there was a service at the time called Technorati that ranked blogs. And my little shitty blog was a top 25 blog. At that time, when blogs were a big deal, like, you know, TechCrunch was out and platforms like that, like, it was a huge deal to be in the top 100. To be in the top 25 at the time as a blogger was nirvana. That's why I wasn't actually going to go to work for anybody when I quit the job with this telco company that I was working for at the time. But Neil talked me into coming over and partnering with him. Okay, so I had enough cred to go along with, you know, what I was saying. Like, when I was able to say that my blog was kicking ass, it was true. And Technorati back, I think in 2021, there's an article here that I just pulled up, stopped basically ranking blogs and went into more news, information, marketing, advertising. Because blogs, the blog heyday has come and gone long ago. Like, blogs now are mostly used as a website framework and to run podcasts. That's basically what blogs are right now. So anyway, again, you can go look that up. If you want the link, it'll be in the show notes today, so you can go read the whole thing. But now that I've established that I actually understand who this man is and how his organization's run, because I was able to pull that off, this is what he's doing. Panama. Panama got the canal back over a terrible, terrible treaty that Jimmy Carter made with them. It basically screwed us out of billions, if not trillions of dollars, for something we built with American labor and American money. Though we did use a lot. I'm not going to say we didn't use Panamanian labor, but I'm saying we paid for that labor. We sent our own people in. We lost thousands of Americans in that project, mostly the yellow fever, because we didn't have a vaccine for it at the time. And, you know, people think I'm anti-vax. I'm not. I'm anti-untested, right, and unnecessary. And yellow fever, trust me, you if you're going to go where that's a risk, you want a vaccine for yellow fever, I promise you. And this is, it was just a bad deal. I served in Panama. I saw how the deal worked out. We literally had to put electrical outlets back where they were on the original buildings, on the original blueprints, if we had changed that. And these buildings today are basically used for nothing. Fort Clayton is this massive place in this very poor country with tons of, like, you know, housing for families, and none of it's being used. I've seen people driving through. It's a ghost town. But at the same time, and I said this back when I started the show, Panama cannot manage the canal. They can't. Panama's government, Panama as a country, is incapable of doing jack shit. So they brought the Chinese in, which everybody knew was going to happen. And the Chinese are controlling the canal zone because they actually have the logistical capability to do so. They are charging American ships a effing fortune to go through the canal. All Trump wants is lower cost fares for U.S. shipping to go through the canal and an assurance that if we need it for military defense, it will be there. He wants a new agreement, a new deal. He does not want to actually take it back. But you have to start out with the outlandish. What about Canada being the 51st state? It's a stupid thing. First of all, no Republican is going to want to bring a nation of 40 million people, about 30 million of which are socialists, into America. What he wants is a new version of, like, the USMC agreement that he had with Mexico and Canada. He wants better terms. He wants it basically an open border between Canada and the United States for commerce and for travel, right? He wants more ability for U.S. companies to get involved with Canadian oil and mineral extraction, and he wants favorable terms toward the North Sea, right, because there is more and more shipping and more of that area opening up because we do have global warming. Now, no, I haven't gone overboard and I haven't lost my mind and I don't believe it's all because of the air XUX hail. We are having longer, or I should say warmer summers and more open areas in that part of the world because the climate of the planet changes over time and it happens to be in a warming period right now. So that's what's going on with Canada. He wants a deal with Canada. And whatever that – he doesn't even know what that deal is going to look like. And I'm telling you right now, when he goes that outlandish, he is flying by the seat of his fucking pants, right? But he'll get something out of it is where he's thinking. Greenland. The goal with Greenland – I am about 99.9% on this. The goal with Greenland is to have an independent Greenland with a strong treaty with the United States of America that allows for mineral exploitation of Greenland. – That would be a win. A bigger win for Trump would probably be to actually get it to the point of something like a territory, like American Samoa or Guam. I don't know if that's going to happen. He's certainly not going to make Greenland a state. That's never going to happen. They have five political parties in Greenland, and the one that's most right is left of our Democrats, other than they don't have the woke nonsense in Greenland. You're not going to go to Greenland and hear about trans rights or some stupid shit like that. But from a political standpoint, they are to the left of our, you know, normal, non-brain damaged Democrats. So you'd be giving two senators who would forever be Democrats to a place with about 60,000 people. No. So either a protectorate or territory, but most likely an independent Greenland, with the United States seen as kind of a strategic partner, because there is a strategic military interest, again, in that part of the world. go look at the globe from above and see how close Russia, the United States, Canada, all of that is, and then look at how much Russia has going on with China, especially thanks to Biden basically shoving the two of them together, right? So that's what's going on. I'm not saying it's good or bad. That's up to you. What I am saying is everything you're hearing is a troll, and if you keep taking the bait, you're going to keep ending up on the hook and being drugged through the lake. So stop buying into it. And I'm telling you, go read what I did and how I pulled off landing a client like Trump in 1 week by starting out with literally saying, you suck. And a week later, having a signed contract with a company's name on it that I had to tell Joseph Katz like 2 weeks later, by the way, the company you signed the contract with literally didn't exist when you signed the contract, because I knew sooner or later you'd find out. And I knew it would be cool if I was honest with them from the beginning, and it wouldn't be if I hadn't been. That's all true shit. All right, so that's what's going on there. Let's talk about something cool for a second here, though. Let's talk about some gun polls. I've been running some gun polls on Twitter. And the first one I'm going to cover with you really didn't work out like I thought it would. I was actually just trying to make a point for myself here. You got all of these manufacturers coming out with pistol caliber carbines. And I've always been a big fan of pistol caliber carbines. All the way back in 2008, one of the first episodes I did that caught on with like the search engines and bought me tons of traffic and got me tons of new listeners to the show was on pistol caliber carbines. And I don't know, maybe I just see a pistol caliber carbine different than most people. I guess most people see it like as a second line of self-defense. Like I'm going to have my carry gun and then I have my PCC in my vehicle. And if some shit really goes down, I'll go to my, you know, not AR, but this intermediate weapon. So if I'm going to keep it in, like if I'm not going to walk around with it, then it might as well be an AR. So I'm not really looking at this as like a defensive weapon, though it could be. It certainly could be. I look at these pistol caliber carbines as plinkers, fun guns, and hunting implements. And I guess this also has a lot to do with where you live. Can you use a semi-auto to hunt deer? Because some places that's totally cool. Pennsylvania, they will throw you in the jail for using a semi-auto to hunt with. So I really thought the answer to this question was going to be 10 millimeter. But the big cartridges that everybody does semi-auto pistol caliber carbines with are 9 millimeter, 40 Smith, 10 millimeter, and 45 ACP. And my question was, if a gun maker is developing a semi-auto pistol caliber carbine, what caliber round will guarantee you that you will at least think about getting one? 9mm got 45% of the vote. I'm betting almost all of those people carry 9mm sidearms, which is why Smith & Wesson, who I love their new carbine, made it in that. And I'm like, when 10mm? They also make it 40 Smith & Wesson. That got 7.9% of the vote. I illogically and irrationally hate the 40 Smith & Wesson. I'll admit it, but I have my reasons, even though they're not really good reasons to just hate a cartridge, but I do. It has no legitimate reason to exist. It came about in the early 1980s. The FBI was looking for a sidearm that had better stopping power than a 9mm that had some instances where it was used and the person that you tried to unalive remained alive and tried to unalive you long after having taken several rounds. So they came up with the 10mm. And then these limp-wristed, sissy-ass FBI dudes couldn't shoot it. They were starting to like let people in the FBI that were 5'6". They started letting women in that were going to be out in the field doing things. And I'm not necessarily against that. What I'm telling you is they couldn't shoot the 10mm. They said the grips were too big and the recoil was too hard. So they downloaded it. But the little people said, it's still too big. I can't hold it. And so they shortened it so they could fit it in the same frame size, the same grip size as a 9mm, and came out with the 40 Smith, which is just basically a reduced load 10mm. Think of it as a 38 and a 357. And so to me, the 10mm was perfect the way it is. The 40 Smith, to me, has no advantage over the 9mm. It has no legitimate reason to exist. And this was all paid for with your money, right? Probably part of the debt we're still paying off is where that went. So I hate it. 10mm got 28% of the vote, and 45 got 17% of the vote. I really thought people would pick what I picked. Maybe Smith & Wesson and all these other companies building these things are smarter than me. They're building what will sell versus what's the best. Because to me, I want to be able to take this thing and go kill a deer with it and use it for defense. And the 10 millimeter, man, is a sledgehammer. And people say, well, why not like the 357 Magnum or 44 Magnum? They don't really function in semi-autos. I love the 357. I own multiple 357s. I've got multiple levers. I've got some single shots. I've got a bolt action. I've got multiple handguns in it. I love it. A 44, same, right? But what I'm looking for is bang, 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 pew, pew, pew. All right, next up, we'll go faster now. I just was just curiosity, and this one came out exactly like I thought it would. Let's say you were going to get a beautiful custom fit, custom engraved, like you're making an investment. You're going to be like hoping someday your great-grandchild has this gun, double over and under or side-by-side shotgun made, and you don't want a 12-gauge. You want it to be something a little bit unique. You want 4, 10, 16, 28, or 10 because you're a psychopath. I think the 20% of people that said 10 just said it to be funny. I think really that's between the 4, 10, 16, and 28. And this came out like I expected. 16-gauge, 37% of the vote, runaway winner against everybody else. 28-gauge got 15%. 4, 10 got 27%. Most of the people that said 4, 10 also stated that they grew up shooting one, and that's why. The 28 is probably, using my logic on the last question, the right answer. It is just a fantastic round, but it's not very well known. It's not very common. It is just beautiful for quail in a double shotgun. It's just fantastic, but I can understand why people didn't feel that way. That's what I would do. If I was having like something custom built for me, that's what I would have done with it. Now, I'm also doing something that didn't get a lot of votes. It got a lot of exposure, a lot of comments, but not many votes. But I decided I'm going to – what do people think is the most underrated rifle cartridge? And I let people figure out what that meant to them. What I mean by it is people don't talk about it anymore. When people buy a new gun, it's not really what they think about buying anymore. So, you know, something like everything out there is made in 7mm-08. Plenty of guns are made in 2506 from the first slide alone. 270 Winchester got in. I agree that they're common, but they're not like no one's like, man, did you see the Remington has this new bolt action and you can get it in 7mm-08? No, they all want 6.5 Creed, whatever. So what are all these great cartridges that were developed over like 150 years? What are the most underrated? And I did not put 3006 in there. Because I feel like even though that one sort of qualifies, it really is everywhere, and there's tons of people that use it. So everything but that, there was 20 or 16 different rounds that went through this, and we're now in the last round of the finalists. So we had 260 Remington versus 2506 versus 7mm-08 and 338-06. Personally, the round I think is most underrated out of that list is 338-06, and I got the least amount of agreement from the audience. 7mm-08 won that one, and it is a great round. That was a tough one to beat out, I guess. Then 35 Whalen, 22 Hornet, 30-30 Winchester, 35 Remington. 30-30 Winchester, 68%. Nobody else is even close. Personally, I like medium bores. 35 Whalen, I really think that is probably the most underrated cartridge personally out of all of them. That's what I would have picked. This is something that you can hunt, honest to God, dangerous game with, down to deer, and it doesn't beat the hell out of you. It's an incredible round. 338-06 probably performs a little better. 35 Whalen's probably a little bit more underrated, though. Then we had 243 Winchester, 257 Roberts, 7 Mauser, and 280 Remington. 243 crushed. If you combined everybody else, they wouldn't have beat it. 51.3% to the 243. Then we had 22-250, 270 Winchester, 350 Remington Magnum, 45-70 Government. I would have voted 45-70 here. It came in second place. 270 Winchester got 53% of the vote. Like I said, one person said, but the 270 is not underrated. I ran four polls to get there. And I said, if you don't see your round, tell me to add it. The 270 was the one most people in the first three said, why isn't that there? So that's how it got on the list. People felt that it was underrated. So I added it. My gut is it may win. But right now on my Twitter / X is the final poll. It'll run till tomorrow morning, and it's the top four. If you don't vote, in this case, you really can't bitch, at least not to anybody that will listen to you. So with that, let's go ahead and move on. What I want to talk about next is California wildfires. So we got some fun in there before we went back to the shitstorm, right? Literal, like a shit firestorm out there. So I'll tell you some things that I think about this. Number one, the conspiracy stuff has already started, including the completely crazy, like over-the-top, insane conspiracy theories. It was space, you know, space lasers run by, like, South Pole NASA Jew penguins or something, right? Like, and then there's this video that's supposed to be a satellite image of them all starting simultaneously. Guys, if you know anything about what satellite imagery looks like, that's a fake fucking image. That's bullshit. It's not real. My gut is arson is 100% or at least 75% the cause of these fires. There could be some naturally occurring fires. I've seen video, legitimate video, of these winds blowing and sparking power lines. And the dude that posted the video is like, and I know this guy, right? This isn't some random engagement farming shit. He's like, I've been calling for a day. And this is still happening, and nobody, and they didn't have a fire there. And he's like, no, and he's got video of it, like, arcing out, and they haven't turned off the power, and nobody's shown up. That's incompetence and/or malice, but it is not arson. They also caught a dude with a fucking blowtorch, with multiple eyewitnesses saying, "We grabbed this motherfucker. We citizens arrested his ass. Here's a video of it happening." It's evidence. Take this fucker to jail. And they released him with no charges and said they did not have enough evidence to charge him with anything. Trust me, if they want to charge you with something in California, they'll invent something to charge you with. So I think there's arson going on here. I don't think it's reasonable that these fires are breaking out in these distinctive locations that far apart. And it's all, it's just, you know, like somebody threw a cigarette, or it was, you know, a lightning strike when there hasn't been rain there in 8 months, or some other accidental or natural way for fires to start. Fires are natural. Fires happen. And if you don't want natural fires to happen in a way where you can't control them, you need man-controlled, prescribed burning and good forest management, which California does not have. Okay? This problem is multiple problems in one, but nothing has made it worse or more likely to have happened than incompetent management at the state and local level in California. There are people posting picture after picture after picture. I was in California near Los Angeles hiking, and this is what the woods look like. And it's dry, tinder, fucking everywhere. If you leave your forest look like that, okay, in a dry climate, you're going to have massive fires when they happen. Not if they happen, when they fucking happen. And you get all these Dudley do-nothings saying, well, I live in Oregon. We don't have all these problems up here, and we leave it just like that, too. Well, first of all, no, you don't, because I've seen the fire management practices in Oregon, and there's a whole lot of fucking biochar being made there, by the way, thanks to the work of Kelpie Wilson. But there's a lot of burning done intentionally when it's safe to do so in Oregon. But the other thing you have in Oregon and Northern California and Washington State, it fucking rains there, dumbasses. You are wet all the time. This place is dry as a bone all the time. And it has been for as long as any living person can remember. You add dry, high winds, and lots of tinder, this is what you're going to get. Then you turn around and you hire people into strategically important positions, like, I don't know, fire chief and whatnot, because they're gay lesbians, right? Who are transsexual advocates and make people feel better. You literally hire this Bull Dyke fire chief chick who, when she's asked, but what about, like, if we lower these standards and we hire people for DEI, what if, like, my husband is in a house and he can't get out? Can you carry him out? And this woman, it sounds like an SNL skit, she literally responds with, well, then your husband got himself in a position he shouldn't have. Okay, she should be catapulted into the fucking Pacific right there. Like, they just, you don't get to say that and have that position. Like, trebuchet, hogpipe, right out in the Pacific with all the arsonists. Like, this is bullshit. You can't behave this way when you're responsible for people's fucking safety and you're paid with public dollars to protect people. Right? And I don't actually think we should catapult her into the Pacific. I'm being theatrical here. But you can't keep your job, but she's gonna. The other fire chief chick, she was pushed by the media. And they said, but did the government fail you? And eventually she said yes. And then her and Karen Bass, the LA mayor, had a big to-do. And there was rumors that Bass had fired her. That turned out not to be true because she would get her asshole sued into oblivion if she did, by the way, because she made that statement. They said they're at odds. But you know what everybody's doing in California now? Newsom, Karen Bass. Well, it doesn't really matter who's responsible right now. We need to fix it. Then we can have an accounting. This is what every father deals with when their kid breaks a fucking window, right? Like, well, Billy broke a window too, right? It's the same shit. Like, what we need to make sure is that we can replace Mr. Wilson's window, right? So I can help with that, Dad. Like, anything except, hey, I'm the one that did it. It's my fault and I'm accountable. No one has owned anything in California. Not one person who's had any authority or power has said at this point, we didn't do as much as we should have. As little as that, let alone we have failed. No one's taken any accountability. Derek's saying at this point, what does it matter anyway? It's the same playbook, isn't it? That's Hillary Clinton about Benghazi. I think it matters to the people who got the shit blown out of them there while you took a freaking shit yourself and did nothing to help them when you could have. When all they asked for was a couple planes to fly over and make noise, and you wouldn't even do that, right? It's the same shit over and over and over and over again. This is incompetence. The big problem now is for California, how many of these people, like in the Palisades, if you lived in the Pacific Palisades, your house was worth minimum $1 million. Minimum $1 million. I'm going to say it again one more time, just so I'm clear. Minimum $1 million. Two bedroom, one bath, little bungalow on the hill overlooking things, $1 million. Four bedroom, nice house, decent sized little yard and whatever, $4-5 million. These are not poor people. For all the talk about insurance being canceled, we'll get to that in a second. Most of these people had insurance. They're going to get money. Gavin Newsom did one thing so far that actually makes common fucking sense, and that is all these houses that need to be rebuilt, we're not going to have zoning, permitting, all this bullshit. Like, you just build your house. Okay, great. If it actually happens that way. But how many of these people that have this kind of income, that live in the state of California, that watch their money get pissed away anyway, okay, over and over, how many of them you think occasionally go, do we really want to live here? And they think, but I love my neighborhood and my neighbors and the people down the street, and we hang out at their pool, and we have margaritas, and the food's really good, and the weather's great, right? So I'm going to stay. But how many of those people, when their house is gone, and they're looking at minimum probably 2 years to rebuild it, do you think that's the final straw for those people? I'll sell my land, I'll take my insurance check, and I'll go anywhere but here. I think the answer to that is around 50% of those people. What a lot of you guys do not understand is how big a piece of the California, and specifically the LA County tax base, that is. That's why Newsom, Newscom is like, oh, no, you won't need permits or nothing, we promise. Trust me, bro, it'll be okay. Because they're terrified of that exodus, which was already happening. This is why I don't buy into the conspiracy theory so they can take the land, like Maui type mindset. And that is because this disproportionately actually hit upper income areas. And that's not good when you have, and those people reliably vote for statist policies that have resulted in exactly what happened. So I'm not happy about this. I always say when people move to Texas from California, they're the best people we get. Like, liberals in Texas come from Dallas, Austin, and Houston. Like, that's what makes liberals here, is the Dallas school district, the Austin school district, and the Houston school district. And places like Plano and the northern burbs of Dallas. They are liberal factories. When somebody moves here from California, they end up being diehard conservatives because they had to purposely disrupt their life to get out of there. It's not like California's buying vacation property in Idaho and Montana. It's not the same thing. It's a drastic change. And so I'd say 75 to 80% of those people end up being an asset to the state of Texas. Not these people. These people will learn nothing. They'll just be tired of paying the taxes, and because their house is gone, they'll move. I look at this like homeschooling with COVID. Since I'm already disrupted, think about it this way. Those of you who would like to move, you'd like to move, but there's something about where you are that's holding you there. And maybe you don't want to move even to another state. You want to move a little further out in the country or whatever. Let's imagine by some horrible stroke of luck, your house burns to the ground. You lose literally everything you couldn't load up and haul ass with. Now you come back. What's left is a pile of rubble and toxic debris. The insurance company goes, here's a check. Your house was, we won't even say you're in California. Your house was worth $400,000. You owed $100,000 still on it. Here's a $400,000 check, and $100,000 is going straight to your mortgage, so you can't get it. Here's $300,000. Tax-free, by the way. You get to keep it all. Are you going to rebuild your house? Or are you going to be like, let me sell this piece of land, another 50, 60 grand, and go build what I really want where I really want it? What do you think these people are going to do? And if I just do that somewhere else, and this happened to your whole fucking county, and it's going to be hell to even get builders and materials in, but you can move 100 miles away, and you can make a phone call, and a builder will show up, give you a bid, and start construction. What are you going to do? This is coming. This is going to gut a lot of very affluent people out of California, and specifically LA County. People are saying it's the end of Gavin Newsom. It's not. These people have learned nothing. They will double down on voting stupid. It probably destroyed Gavin Newsom as a solid presidential candidate in 2028, which I think he was. But other than that, Newsom will survive. He will stay in California now, and we'll see how long the memory of people is. But he could still be a candidate in 28. I think there's a much stronger candidate from the Democrats in 2028. And that candidate, I'll just go on record with it right now. As of right now, the strongest presidential candidate out of the left to run for president in 2028 is Josh Shapiro from Pennsylvania. Josh Shapiro. Anyway, let's keep going on from there. So I don't know if any of you guys saw, but over the weekend, Jamie Dimon gave another one of his interviews. The host is CBS or CNN or MSNBC, somebody like that, right? Mainstream media. Three times tried to goad him into just tearing apart Donald Trump, and he wouldn't take the bait, right? And people are like, well, I don't understand. Like, he's not really a fan of Trump. No, he's not. But let me explain some of you about the bankers. And when I say bankers, I mean the banksters. I mean the old family bankers, Rothschilds, et cetera, right? Which Dimon is part of that legacy. All the way back to, and well documented, it's earlier than this, but all the way back to the Napoleonic Wars, the bankers have had a very effective, very reliable method of ensuring that they maintain influence. When there is a conflict, be it on a battlefield or politically, back both sides during the conflict and then go all in on the winner. That's Jamie Dimon. He's not going to change. If Kamala Harris had won the election, he would be all in on Kamala, and he would be trashing Trump right now, because it's popular to trash Trump, and Trump would have been out of power and have no chance of getting back in. Now that Trump's in, he'll go all in. He won't ringingly endorse him, but he won't criticize him, and he'll go on. But that's not what I really want to talk about from that interview. He was asked about Bitcoin, and he compared – you know, when people get on this, I'm done with you. You're in a timeout, car care. Like, when people just comment after comment after comment after comment after comment, and it's all just hate, like, you got to go. And it's not even hate for me. Some of y'all saw it, some of you didn't, but bye-bye. Bye-bye. In Trump's words, bye-bye. Right? It's you too. Bye-bye. You're gone. You got 5-minute timeout, buddy. You can come back. And if you have contributory comments that people want to engage with you on, we'll leave you there. And if you don't, you'll go bye-bye forever. So it's up to you now. All right. Now, anyway, so Diamond was asked then about Bitcoin. And he basically said, you should be able to buy Bitcoin if you want to. I don't have any problem with that. Well, he doesn't have any problem with that now. That's a totally, like, again, you back both sides, and eventually when you have to concede a winner, eventually Jamie will come around to Bitcoin. You know, his bank is enabling BlackRock's ETF for Bitcoin. It's just, see what I'm saying? Anyway, but he said it has no intrinsic value. And when I heard him say that, I was like, oh my God, it's a meme. I actually made a meme for it with him and Janet Yellen. But you can put a bunch of people in the box, right? All of these incredibly powerful people. Do you think there's a single member of the Federal Reserve Board that likes Bitcoin? Do you think the Secretary of Treasury for a few more days, Janet Yellen, likes Bitcoin? Do you think the current chairman of the Federal Reserve really likes Bitcoin? Do you think anybody from the bankster families really likes Bitcoin? Do you really think they like them? No, they don't. These are the most powerful and wealthy people on the planet in regard to economics. And they hate Bitcoin. And what can they do about it? Nothing. Not a fucking thing. Jamie, my brother, right? What's it say? My brother in Christ, right? You are the intrinsic value of Bitcoin. The fact that you hate it, and with all your money and all your influence and all your power, all you could sit there and do is cry harder and cope harder, and Bitcoin just keeps going, tick-tock, next block. The fact that you people have trashed this shit since it was less than a dollar, and it's around $92,000 today, and it will be higher than that by the end of this year. The fact that one day Bitcoin will be $1 million of Bitcoin, and I guarantee you that that will happen probably in the next cycle, and you can't stop it. You are Bitcoin's intrinsic value. Every time you open your mouth and say something about this, indicating that you hate it, you don't like it, you want it to go away, the fact that the government went all in on destroying it in the beginning, and now we have ETFs, and Bitcoin is in the retirement accounts of firefighters, FBI agents, and school teachers, you are Bitcoin's intrinsic value. The fact that you can't do shit about it is the intrinsic value. The fact that I can have, let's say, Adrian here right now, right? Adrian is I don't know where Adrian is in the world, but he's wherever he is. And he wants to sell me something. I want to pay him in Bitcoin, and nobody can do a fucking thing about it. And when I pay him, he knows the payment's good. That's the intrinsic value of Bitcoin. This is backed by security and energy, right? If you really want the intrinsic value of Bitcoin, it's Bitcoin's network motivated totally by voluntary incentives that provides security and is backed by energy. That's a technically right answer. But the legitimate, like, everyday answer is that the people that hate it, despite being the most powerful and wealthy people in the world, can't do anything to stop it. And it has succeeded better than any asset in history since inception. That is its intrinsic value. Thank you, Jamie Dimon, for being the intrinsic value to Bitcoin. I appreciate you for that, brother. Let's move on. Okay, let's talk about somebody else. One of my other favorite people to bash, Zuckercuck, couple names I came up with for the guy over the years, but Zuckerberg, right? Zuckerberg had his come to Jesus meeting with free speech, and he went before the Pope of free speech, I guess you'd call him, Joe Rogan, on the Joe Rogan podcast to tell his side of the story. And his side of the story is, listen, bro, look at me. I look like a human now. I'm eating meat. I'm getting some physical exercise. I don't look like I was beamed down from some friggin' alien spaceship anymore. Look, man, I understand. And we were always about free speech in the beginning. I never wanted to do this. See what happened, bro? See, the government told me if I didn't do what they wanted, they would investigate my company and destroy it. Yeah, okay. And there's a lot of people being really hard on Zuckercuck. But I will too, but I will say that I can understand why somebody with a publicly traded company that employs that many people in the situation that we were in, especially during the raging scamdemic, right, might have bent the knee a bit. I wouldn't have done it, but I can understand why somebody else would. But bro gave them a portal to log in and to specifically feed the data they wanted censored. Bro wrote them checks, right, to make sure they stayed in office. Like, he set up entire organizations designed to support getting Democrats elected. He did not do the banker thing. He didn't back both sides and then pick the winner. Bro went all in with the people he says were oppressing him and his people. So what's he doing now? Why is he doing that now? Adrian's asking about, I'll go ahead and tell you what it is now. The sword, right? I'll tell you about the sword in a bit. When we get done with this segment, we'll talk about the sword real quick. It was a gift from Andy McCann from CrossFit Garage. Anyway, he's reading the tea leaves now. Like, this is what Zuckerberg is. He'll do whatever he can to continue to build Meta into a very powerful entity and make lots of money doing it. And so when Biden and Harris were in power, that was do what the Democrats tell you to and completely lay down and acquiesce to the state. And now it's, well, do the same thing with the new boss, who's different but the same as the old boss, and pretend to be for free speech. That's all this is. This is a survival move. Because if he continues to censor anything because it's right versus left, if he continues to censor things like you don't get your own pronouns as an opinion, he is going to end up held accountable for everything on that platform. That's basically Trump's only move with this, or the Trump administration's only move. And this is what I mean. Social media companies are held apart as different from a publisher like the New York Times. If the New York Times allows something to be published that is clearly libel, it's clearly a lie about somebody, and that somebody gets pissed off, they can turn around and sue not just the person who wrote the article. They can sue the publication. And they can say, you're responsible for this. You didn't know editorial oversight of this. Well, it's unreasonable to expect a social media platform to do that until they start saying, but we're doing it. Well, now you're taking all this shit down. So now maybe what we need to do is remove your protections. And now we maybe need to get lawyers, like lots of them, like truckloads of fucking lawyers equipped with AI, to review everything you ever allowed published and see any lies we can find and open the door so they can sue the living fuck out of you. That's what he's afraid of. Now, what's the media saying? Here's what I'm going to say, too, about this. Do I trust Zuck? No. Will I start using Facebook again other than just post and ghost? No. Okay? Do I think this is a good thing and it will make the people who insist on using Facebook have a better experience? Yes. For how long? I don't know. But yeah, sure. Now, if you like having your data stolen, a record of everything you did made, having all your shit sold to companies, both foreign and domestic, and sold to government, stay on Facebook because that's what they're doing. And that will not change. But at least you'll be able to talk about what you want to talk about. At least you'll be able to say what you want to say. And they're replacing it with community notes. But have you noticed what the media is saying about this? The media is not saying that it's community notes. And if they do, they do not explain the community notes process on X because Zuck said he's going to basically do what Elon's doing. If you don't know, this is how community notes work on X. You apply. Not they say, he's just going to let the users do it. No. To be a community note member on X, you first have to apply. Somebody from X, probably Grok now, reviews your shit and says, is this person basically neutral? I mean, are they all in on one side? They're out. Do they constantly tell people to fuck off like I do? Yeah, you're out. You're not getting in, right? They're looking for people who are kind of mild-mannered Clark Kent types, not Supermans. And then if you get made into a community note community member, you get to either say, I think this should be noted, or people say this should be noted. And then people that are in the community of note makers vote on the note. Is this valid? Should it become public? That's why sometimes you'll see a screenshot of a note and it doesn't exist. Because one of the people that can make notes and is in on the backside of the process will screenshot it and say, here's the note in progress or here's the note that was denied. And that way you still know that people have responded to it. Because if it's just the readers, if it's just the users, right, then anybody can comment anyway. So by having the note process, there's something to it. Then once it goes out publicly, there'll be a thing that says rate it. Now, if it's not going to do this exact thing, I don't know, but he said it's going to be like it. This is not what the media is saying. So what happens then is you'll see a note, you can rate it, and it'll give a whole bunch of things. And it says, well, did you think this note was effective? Or was it unnecessary? Was it good or bad? Why do you think it was good? Why do you think it's bad? You check all these things, hit submit. That all goes into a database, and that ends up ranking the people managing the system that, yes, when they put out a correction, as community notes are, that in general it's well received by the people that use the platform, and they find it fair. I find community notes to be very effective on X. There's a lot of things I don't like about X. Community notes is not one of them. I have had several times read something, and because of the way certain people act and behave, I believed it. I even shared it, and it got noted, and it was corrected, and I'm like, okay, this isn't real. I appreciate that. And I think anybody who loves truth, anybody who values truth, should want a system like that. Fact checkers, independent third-party fact checkers, are nothing like that. They are one-size-fits-all, boom. And then the fact checkers get used to completely censor, delete, and remove, and sometimes deplatform the person that made the post with no opportunity to respond to it. So they're totally different things. That's what's going on there. Real quick, before we move on, and I tease this a couple of times to get people to come watch videos, this is the sword. It's a really cool sword. It is made by a company called Sabersmith at sabersmith.com. Annie McCann was, man, I like, you get gifts from people sometimes. You're like, that was nice, thought, or whatever. It's kind of a perfect gift for somebody like me. I have almost everything that I really, really, really want, but there are things that I just won't part with the money for, like this. This is not a, like, Spencer Gifts sword. I'm a little afraid of it, and I know how to use a sword. It is sharp. It is, you know, you don't want a sword to be overly sharp anyway, because a sword is a battle implement, but it is sharp, and it would lob an arm off. I have no doubt about that. If you were working it and you accidentally brushed your arm, you would take a piece of your arm off. Not so much because of how sharp it is, because it is sharp, period, and the weight and flow of how a short sword works. Beautiful bloodline in it, but the sword is from Andy McCann, and I really appreciate it. If you want something like it, check out Sabersmith. And I asked Andy, do you have anything going on with Sabersmith? And he said, no. He used to go to like the Renaissance fairs and stuff like that with his family, and they always loved the blades. And this was a company that was always there, that they always went and looked and Googled all their stuff. So he just did it to be nice. And, man, what a gift. I probably need to get one of the plaques they sell to put it on the wall. I probably really agree to do this wall behind me instead of it just being the Agoras flag. Though we sell like 10 of these a week on Amazon because it's back there. So that's why I've never taken it down. Anyway, with that, real quick before I move on, I'm going to go. I have a portable heater in my office because this room is cold as shit, even with the heat on, and it's too hot here. I'm going to go shut that off, and I'll be right back. I was trying to make it through that without getting up to do it, but it needed to be done. All right, so let's move on. So another thing I've been doing since the new year, and I actually started like a week before the new year, and I've had people, the flag is an agorist flag, A-G-O-R-I-S-T. You can Google. I can't explain it right now. I got to keep going with the podcast. But there should be a link in the video notes, though. I altered the video notes today, so it may not be there. I need to put it back in. But if you just go to Amazon and search for agorist flag, you'll find it. And I'll go ahead and give you a real quick explanation of agorist flag. Gray on the top, black on the bottom, split diagonally, the gray and the black market meeting, right? Free, true free enterprise. Anyway, I've been putting these posts up, and it's just this automated buy that I set up with Strike, which is one of my favorite places to buy Bitcoin, especially in small amounts like that. So Strike has, and I'm going to put a video out on how to do this, but it's really intuitive. You can totally figure it out. You can set up DCA, DCA buying with Strike, and you set like a monthly buy of like $200 or $500 or whatever you want to do. And that DCA, for those that don't know, that's dollar cost average. If you buy small amounts over time, you're always buying the dip. You're always buying the peaks. In the end, you tend to win out over people that trade. That's the theory with DCA. you can set it up to buy once an hour. If you want to do $24 a day, you can set up a $1 DCA buy every hour. And after a week of DCAing on strike, all the fees go away. It's a hunt. Whatever you buy is what you get. Yeah. And so I set up $5 a day. That's $35 a week, about $140 a month. And when you post it every day, some people are like, that's $5. Why are you posting that you bought $5? But if I posted $140 a month, people will be like, I can't afford it. You see where this is going? What I am trying to do, I have so many people in this audience, I can't afford Bitcoin. It's too expensive. The price doesn't matter as to you affording it. These are the same people that like, they buy silver over gold. I'm not going to say they think silver is a better investment because I get more. Percentage is percentage. If you invest $100 in something and you get a 5% return, you made $5. If you invest $100 in something and you get a 25% return, you end up with $125. You make $25. It doesn't matter if you bought one of the thing that made the 25 and four of the thing that made the 5. If they both total $100 in value, the return is the same. Nothing has beat Bitcoin, period, for the last decade and a half. There is not a better investment that you could have made over time. If you will get into doing this, and see, here's where the trap is. Adrian says DCA is better in bear markets and lump sum better in bull markets. No. No. Because you don't know what's next. We hit 107,000, and then people called 101 the dip, and next thing you know, we're down to almost 90. By spreading your DCA out across time, especially into a daily model, and as long as you're over $30 a month, you can do that. You can do $1 a day. You are always catching your dips and your peaks. And if you get into that, it's the other thing is it's a habit. You're always sweeping your surplus capital in. So we will go through this amazing ride this year. There'll be gnashing and wailing of teeth. There will be celebrations and bottles of champagne opening and because I've been doing this since 2013. I've been through it. And I just looked back and said, self, what if you had done this little tiny buy starting in 2013? And I said, I don't want to think about it. Because as well as I've done, I would have done a lot better. So that means when the bear will come, and the bear shall cometh, will the bear come after an all-time high of 500,000? Or will the bear come after an all-time high of 200,000? I don't know. I don't care. This is automated, one monthly deposit, and boom, it just happens. All I'm trying to do is get some of you guys that are continuing to make excuses to shut the fuck up with your excuses. If you tell me I just don't want to buy Bitcoin, period, fine. If you give me a reason and your reason is stupid, I will tell you that your reason is stupid because, well, you gave me a reason and it was stupid. And that's my job. My job is not to go, oh, yeah, that makes sense, when I know full well it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense at all. And as I said earlier, what's the intrinsic value of Bitcoin? It's that Jamie Dimon and Janet Yellen, Jay Powell, et cetera, hate it. Most powerful, most wealthy people in the world can't stop it. That's the intrinsic value. So I encourage you deeply. Whether it's Strike, whether it's Swan, I don't care who it is. I don't care how you do it. I don't care where you buy it. But is it safe to buy it's safe to buy Bitcoin anywhere. The key is don't keep it there. And I would get yourself up to about $500 and withdraw. And when you get back up to $500, withdraw. And when you get back up to $500, withdraw. And when you get up to $500, you see how it works? Because that will make it worth withdrawing. Now, I'll tell you the worst place to buy Bitcoin right now. Because by the time you're done getting raped in the butt with fees for buying and for withdrawing, you're going to pay a lot more for your Bitcoin, and that's Coinbase. I'm going to remove them from my Bitcoin Tools page. I've left them there up till now because there is still some utility. I'll probably leave them there with a disclaimer, don't buy your Bitcoin here. They are, if you are a verified and known customer, if you need to go to cash in the bank, because you need to do something like, I don't know, pay for a truck, they're the easiest way to do that. I bought a truck this year that we had leased for 3 years. It had very low mileage on it. The price they wanted for it was wonderful. And interest rates, even with the freaking, like, I have the highest credit score. I'm like 5 points under a maximum credit score. And the payments on it were still like, I'm like, 5 years ago, I could have driven like a fucking loaded Corvette for this money. I'm not doing it. And I have some ETH that's still back from the shitcoin days that I paid like a dollar an ETH for. And so I sold enough Ethereum at like $4,000 to buy the truck. And I used Coinbase, even though they rape you on fees, because it's the easiest way to get dollars in your bank account. And so that's why I did that. I would not, I would not, absolutely not make a regular habit of buying there. I wouldn't anymore. TM Permaculture says he supports Brian at Coinbase and his work in DC. That's great. I still don't recommend that you get money taken out of your stack. You see what I'm saying? Like, just go buy $500 worth of Bitcoin on Coinbase, and at the exact same time, buy $500 worth of Bitcoin on Strike or Swan, and then send both of them to different addresses on a wallet and just see what you get, and you'll see what I mean. And that's my big problem. That's my big problem with them, okay? But like I said, when it comes to going to cash in the bank so you can, like, write a check to Toyota, they're pretty good for that. I wouldn't have them as my only way, though. Let's see. How much more damage can Brandon do before the 20th? More than you will expect. More than you will expect. What Biden's doing right now is clearly not Biden's doing. Biden is signing whatever somebody puts in front of him and said, here's your Jell-O and your ice cream and sign this piece of paper. And then read this thing that says why you signed it to the camera. That's all he's doing. But they're being pretty crafty about it. What they're doing is like the offshore drilling ban and some deals that have been made with government state workers have been through contracts and specific congressional authorizations where it's not very clear in some instances that you can just undo it easily without involving Congress, which will be difficult because of the razor-thin majority in the House and other things that need to get done in Congress. Or in some instances, like if you sign a contract with a union that represents a worker and you're a president and that contract is considered valid, the new president can't undo it like undoing a executive order. But there's a lot of ways around it. So there's a lot of problems like that. There's also a lot of money being thrown out to other countries before Trump gets in. Once the money's gone, you can't get it back. And Trump's going to have a lot of shit to deliver on. So a lot of this is that he even will talk shit about is going to get let go. And they know that. And they're going to keep doing this. I predict a slew of preemptive pardons. So much so that I think that there will be real discussion about the power of the pardon. And do we need a constitutional amendment? And you might see your first constitutional amendment in a very, very long time around this. And I don't think they'll take away the ability of a president to issue a pardon. I really don't think they'll do that, because why do you think it was put in there in the first place? Do you think it was like, we might have some day where it'd be a good thing? Or do you think the people in government themselves were like, if we ever end up in a bad way, we might want to get out of jail free card available to us if we kiss the right ass the right way? So I think that just like a lot of people have been asking me a lot about how real estate tax works recently, because I mentioned in a different post that I won't get into about how real estate can give you tax-free cash flow. Do you know why there's so many tax advantages to being a real estate, not owner, but investor? Like, you own it, but you're using it as investment property. Go look at how many members of the United States House of Representatives are real estate multimillionaires. Like, all of them. Both parties, across the board. Pocahontas is a real estate millionaire, right? Rand Paul, who I like, is a real estate millionaire. The government wrote the laws for themselves, and it's just one of those things that we get the loophole to if we figure out how to use it. It actually came from either a senator or a house rep in Michigan, I believe, that was kind of the initial push behind it, got everybody else behind it, and they created all these loopholes in real estate where you can have cash flow and you don't pay tax on it, because between the fact you're leveraging debt and debt is not taxable as cash flow, and you're writing off depreciation, and you can roll that over. Anyway, the government did that for themselves, and you can just use it. Power of the pardon is the same way, but I think there might be real discussion that in order for a president to issue a pardon, the person receiving the pardon must have at least been charged with a crime. Maybe not convicted, right? And if you think about the way the pardon was designed, when there was at least some intent for it to be used properly, it would be that, you know, builder of castles here did something the government didn't like. He was done in wrongly by the federal court system, and he was convicted. And he was, maybe even he did something bad. Builder was a bad boy. He did something he shouldn't have done. And most people look at it and go, bad boy, Builder, you shouldn't have done that. And you would think, like, if he got 2 years at Club Fed, we're all good. You know, he paid his debt to society, and he can go back and build whatever his life. But he gets a 25-year sentence for something that should have got two. Well, a president can go, you know, I'm just going to commute the sentence, or I'm going to pardon it, depending on, like, let's say he ended up in prison, like, under a different administration for, like, 8 years, and you can't give him his 6 years back, so instead of just commuting the sentence, you might issue a full pardon and give him a complete reset. Or I'll even say Biden's brother or something like that, Biden pardoned him. He had gone to prison, got out of prison, paid all his fines, gone through all his probation, and was free and clear, and Biden pardoned him so he could get, like, his rights back. I'm not saying that guy deserved it. I'm saying that's kind of the intent of the pardon. To be able to issue a blanket pardon to your own son covering an 8-year period of anything he might have done in that period, that was even with the sleaze that was the original government, because they were way sleazier than y'all think. That was never the intent. So I think you might see real talk and maybe even action on some limitation on presidential pardons, because I see a slew of preemptive pardons. Like, anything this person did from this point to this point, they cannot be prosecuted for. A slew coming. And I think that, plus more agreements, contracts, money giveaways, commitments to give away money. Now, this is something Trump, back to my lead story, Trump will turn that on its head. So Biden might promise money to, let's say, Ukraine or Mexico or Canada, but doesn't have time to actually initiate it at this point, to actually get the money sent. This takes time, even from a president. When you see he signed off and it happens right away, it either didn't or it was already going to, right? So it could be the case that, like, he says, we're going to give Mexico $5 million for the plight of transsexual heroin dealers in Mexico City, whatever. And then Trump takes over. The money's not sent yet. Halt. Do you want your transsexual heroin dealers money? Then I need this from you. Because then he gets to see what he gets to do then. He gets to buy the favor without being responsible for the favor. That's how it'll get spun. But there's going to be a lot more of this. If you have any questions for me or things you want me to comment on, make sure you put question or comment in all caps if you're in the live stream, and then whatever you want to ask me or ask me to comment about. I only have one of those right now, and I haven't been paying really great attention. I'll try to pay attention through the rest of this. So if you have them, go ahead, do that. I'm going to just do star that one because I think it's a good comment, even though it wasn't for that. Anyway, moving on this whole pardon thing, there's been a lot of talk that Trump was blowing it out of his ass when he said he would pardon Ross Ulbricht. Do I think Ross Ulbricht should have went to prison? I do not. If Ross Ulbricht had been, convicted of the crimes that he was convicted of and had been given like 5 years, would I agree with it? No, but I would accept it. Right. And I think he would have too, like, because he's accepted far worse. He's been in prison, I think, for 13 years now for building a website, and he had no criminal record prior, no violence, and everything he's accused of that makes people say he should be in there, like, you know, he enabled murder or whatever. He's never charged with it. And I don't want to go deep into it, but for those of you that are special children, okay, and you believe the why do you believe anything these people say? You already know they lie about all these other things. Why do you trust them here? But I'll tell you one thing you can trust. Two of the FBI agents that were investigating Silk Road, that logged evidence that was used to convict Ross, were convicted of stealing money and falsifying evidence during the investigation into Silk Road. They stole Bitcoin and they falsified evidence. Not only did they do it, again, they were convicted of it. They both got sentenced to federal prison for it. The judge in Ross's case allowed the evidence to be entered and did not allow the defense to inform the jury that that happened. Okay? And next thing you know, this guy's doing double life plus 40, and the judge tells him when he hands the sentence down, your ideas are dangerous. That's why this is so severe. People have been convicted of the exact same crime since and done like 10 years. Well, sentenced to 10 and done like 5 and been let out. The people that actually committed the crimes on Silk Road got far lesser sentences than the creator of the website did. So Trump promised at the Libertarian Convention, vote for me and I will free Ross on day one. And a lot of people, because they hate Trump, that's the main, it's the, my autistic libertarian friends that went full retard in the words of Robert Downey Jr., they're the ones that, he doesn't mean it, he's not going to do it. It's happening. It's happening. I know for a fact it's happening. I've talked to people within Ross's circle that say it's happening. I have a good Twitter friend, I guess you would call him, from quite a while ago. I've been following him since 2013. He's in direct contact with Ross's sister. He says it's happening. So I've got independent sources that say this is happening. Okay. And day one, my original plan, I was going to get a bunch of people from the TSP Army. I was going to fly to Tucson. I told my wife, I'm going. I don't care if it's last minute. I don't care what it costs. I'm going to be there. And I just want to like wave and clap when he walks out of the federal prison. His family doesn't want that. His family wants quiet, privacy, and peace. They want to take their son home and reintroduce him to the world in their own time. And in their words, Ross will speak to everyone when Ross is ready. And I never wanted to be like, you know, shake your hand or whatever and overwhelm a guy that's been through the hell he's been through. I just kind of wanted to be in the distance. Yeah, the other side of the parking lot, maybe some signs. Good cheer, but he doesn't want that. That man's been through so much shit, and his mother has been through so much shit. His family has been through so much shit. I don't care what they want. They should have it. So I'm asking if you do know any additional information and your plan is to be there, don't. Just honor the family's request. But it is happening, and my understanding is literally is happening on day one. Now, if that means he gets out on day two, but the orders go through on day one, I don't know that. But this is like there's a stack of shit already prepared for the orange man to start signing, and this is in the stack. And this is happening, and there has been back channel communications. It is happening. So to me, and I've said this from the beginning, this is worth it alone to have Trump for 4 years. If he gets a lot of things he wants to do done, there's some I don't like, some I do. But this, I'm not going to like government anyway. I met Lynn about 8 years ago in New Hampshire. We were both speaking at Liberty Forum. And I've never met a person that when I hugged them, I felt them as broken as that woman is. I've had her on the show to tell her story. And I love that family for who they are. And this is a big deal. And I'm very, very happy for Ross. And those of you that aren't, I'm going to just put it this way. If you think that man belongs in jail for one more day, you should go fuck yourself in your ass with a box-style cheese grater, preferably rusted, and you are not entitled to a tetanus shot. That's how I feel about you. You are a dirtbag, scumbag, piece of shit. If you think a man who's done 13 years in federal prison for building a fucking website, who was convicted with the jury being denied to know that his investigators stole money and falsified evidence, and you think he should stay in that jail for one more day, fuck you. And I'm sorry, I don't like to be that blunt with my own audience or whatever, but I know a couple of you special people are out there, and I have to say this. I do not know how you are that person, and you listen to my show after all these years. I don't understand it, and frankly, I don't need you. I don't need you, and I don't want you. Go away. Okay, Now I get to say Jack was wrong. Sort of. Because I really didn't give a shit about this Senate race very much at the time. But in the last election, not the one we just had, Pennsylvania's Senate seat was up for grabs. And the Republicans, being dumb, because they are, and I'm talking about the party here, not necessarily you, if you vote for them, I think you are way less dumb than people who vote Democrat in most instances, I'll say that. But I was totally not on board with Mehmet Oz, Dr. Oz, the fake Dr. Oz, right? The guy that's on TV talking about, every week I have my hands inside somebody's chest. This guy hasn't put a stethoscope on somebody in years, let alone doing, he is a cardiac surgeon. He doesn't fucking do surgery. He doesn't do his show 5 days a week and then run down to the hospital and operate on people's heart. You lying fuck. He's a pharma shill and he's a piece of garbage. The other side was John Fetterman had a stroke and he was borderline mentally non-functional. He wasn't able to speak or communicate. He's turned into probably the best Democrat in the government right now. I mean, also, that's not necessarily a high praise. But if you said name a Democrat in the Senate or the House that you don't completely despise, the first name that will come to my head, and I don't know if it would survive being the number one if I really dug through it, especially the House or so many more, but it would John Fetterman. If you said in the Senate, John Fetterman. John Fetterman's the new Joe Manchin. A lot of shit to not like about Joe Manchin, but at least he was an adult in the room. Democracy worked. I'm shocked. The people of Pennsylvania got it right. The dude with the giant lump on his neck that could barely complete a sentence was a better choice as a senator than the pharma shill from television. And there were a lot of people that said, how can you elect this guy? He can't complete a sentence, right? And yet, the people of Pennsylvania got it right. And I think this is something those of you that vote need to get your heads around. The re-election percentage for a first-term senator going into their second term is over 90%. It's almost certain. Unless the guy ends up on a Diddy tape, and even then he might get re-elected. Unless the party decides to primary him or her. If you are a senator, you can probably stay in the Senate as long as you choose to. And you certainly can stay for at least two terms. So when you vote for a senator, you need to realize that you're electing someone essentially for a minimum of 12 years of power. And you need to understand that a senator is a hell of a lot more powerful than a congressional representative. There's what, 470-something members of the House, there's 100 senators. Just do the math. A senator's vote is a 1% vote on anything. And a senator who is willing to cross the aisle in either direction will often be the decision maker in something passing or not, and can often be the person that either does something like, you know, I'll give you a Democrat that I never liked, but he did something good. John Tester, when the Food Safety and Modernization Act went through and Alex Jones was telling you it was going to make it illegal for you to trade tomatoes and peppers with your neighbor across the fence, that was all bullshit. But it was a real threat to small farms. Tester was the gentleman that said, if you are selling your product in your state, this shouldn't apply to you. If your farm does less than $500,000, this shouldn't apply to you. The Food Safety and Modernization Act was about, hey, this lettuce is giving people E. coli, and we don't know where it came from, and we need to figure out where it came from. That was how it was sold. Well, if you buy from Joe's farm stand down the road, you know where it came from. It's not in Piggly Wiggly. It's not in Albertsons. It's not in Publix. It's not in, you know, A&P or whatever, right? It's right there. You know where it came from. So he wrote what was called at the time the Tester Amendment. But if you go to thesurvivalpodcast.com right now, because sometimes people think I'm lying about some of these things in the past, and I don't know why you would do that. I mean, everything I say can be verified. It's being on the record. And you just put in Tester Amendment, you'll find an article I wrote called Thank You, John Tester. So even that dude, who I never liked, and I never understand, Montana finally got rid of him. at least he had the intelligence to go, this is wrong, and this can be fixed with an amendment. See, you need to understand something about senators. They all have the power to be that person, unless they're really incompetent, useless, and unrespected like Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren is a different kind of senator. Elizabeth Warren is somebody that I think the Senate themselves doesn't want her. She's not respected within the Senate itself, but like she's there. We have to pretend we like her. And her purpose is to float stupid ideas because she is in a state where she will get reelected until she dies and see how the public responds to them. Go back and check. Warren has never introduced a bill that's gotten anywhere, let alone passed. Not one. Been in the Senate since before I started this show. That's more than 16 years. Accomplished nothing. But that's what she is. She's the float. So there's a few like that. But if they're a person that's actually functionally capable of getting shit done, you can always be in a close vote the guy that says or the gal that says, I want this or I want that for my people in my state, or I need this concession or I need this amendment or I'm out. It's an incredibly powerful position. And, man, you know what? Right now, if you said you can undo the results, Jack, you can get rid of Fetterman, but you have to replace him with Dr. Oz from daytime television, I'd leave Fetterneck right where he is. He's more useful than that scumbag, lying piece of crap ever could have been. And to the Republicans to say, but it's a Democrat seat, then you shouldn't have put that asshole in as your pick, okay? You shouldn't have put that in the middle of COVID. You shouldn't have used a pharma shill to try to unseat a Democrat Senate seat, you idiots. Anyway, moving on. I got a story for you. And it's none of this crap. It's just some fun from my childhood. And it also involves a guest we had last year, Jim Shockey, who was like 2 years ago now, one of my heroes growing up that I used to read everything I could on hunting and fishing and traveling. You know, I was reading like books by Robert Rourke from the 50s and Teddy Roosevelt from the 1800s and Sports Afield and all the magazines and all. And Jim Shockey was the man, and he had been the man for 40 years, 50 years now almost. And so when I got to interview him a couple of years ago, that was really cool, right? Peter Kapstick was another writer I read from the time, Pat McManus with the last laugh and all this stuff. Who else? Elmer Keith's old stuff and Jack O'Connor's old stuff. So I always love stuff like that. So, Jim, I've started following on X. I didn't even know he was there until I interviewed him, and he's still traveling and doing all these cool hunts and stuff. And he's down in Cihuatanejo, Mexico, like Cihuatanejo from the movie, right? From, with Shawshank Redemption. And he was trying to catch this lizard in the bungalow he's renting, and he couldn't catch it. It got away from him, right? And I'm like, let me tell you how to catch a lizard. Now, I'll tell you guys now. You want to catch a lizard, and this is not a joke. This is legit. I learned this from Carl Caulfield, who is kind of like my herpetology mentor, except he wasn't my mentor till long after he died because he's that long ago. You get about a 5-foot stick, and you get some common thread, like thread you'd sew a button on with. And you want to tie it about, you know, you need it to be about 6 to 8 inches long, including the noose. You make a little simple, like where you tie a loop and you pull back through it, and you make a slip noose. It's a simple one, right? Not a hangman's noose, just a simple slip noose. And then you take your tongue and wet your fingers and you wet the thread. It'll stiffen up a bit and you pull it out and it'll stay open about the size of like a 50-cent piece. A little smaller if it's a smaller lizard. You go up to the lizard, like you're fishing, you slip the noose right over his neck, and you jerk it, and the lizard dangles, and you grab him, and as long as you don't let him sit there and dangle for hours or whatever, he'll be fine, he'll be unhurt. Some of you think I'm kidding you. Some of you think I just outlined, like, snipe hunting. Like, you hold the bag, and we'll go chase the snipes, hit him with this club, bye, right? No, this is legit, this works. I did this, when I read that in that book, I was probably 10 years old. And, you know, I grew up running the swamps in Jacksonville, Florida, and we had these anoles and fence lizards everywhere. Blue-belly swifts is what the fence lizards were, right? And I was always catching them. And I used to take, like, a minnow bucket, like the ones with the door opens, and to put them in there. And I would catch as many as I could in a day. And I kept some here and there once in a while in vivariums or whatever. But usually you just catch them all day long. At the end of the day, you let them go and count them. And hopefully the cats don't come because the cats are just picking them off if you do that. And you see how many you get that day. Sometimes we'd have friends and we would compete against each other who catch the most lizards. And you kind of sneak up on the lizard, you go around the other side of the tree, boom, you grab a lizard, try not to break his tail. Man, when I figured out how to do this, I became the lizard master. I had one day I caught like 38 annuls and like 19 fence lizards and one skink. Skinks are hard. That technique will work on a skink, but you got to get close enough to them. They take off. They're the ones with the long stripes. But if you ever were in a survival situation, you're a place where there's a lot of lizards, I'm telling you, man, you need a lot of annuls to make a living on you on your belly, but it works, and it works. I do this last time we were in Florida and Sanibel Island with my grandson. I taught him how to do this. It is just a fun thing to know and one of those weird things from my childhood I thought you would like today. All right, so nuclear. Let's talk a little bit about nuclear. Number one, I think one of the things you're going to see more and more of is talk of an eventual deployment of small-scale nuclear reactors. Nuclear reactors that can run like a neighborhood are going to become more common. Nuclear reactors that run data centers. So you're going to have data centers that literally have their own nuclear reactor. I know that sounds crazy, but we're heading there. The other thing you're going to start seeing, though, and you're going to see some – the Trump administration is going to give some clearance on this. These small-scale reactors, the first people to build them are going to be existing power generation companies. They're going to sit right next to, like, natural gas. They're going to become ways to ensure that the grid can still have power when the wind's not blowing or the sun's not shining because of weather. And this, you know, crazy goal to get to net zero and whatever. You're going to see more and more of that. But I do also want to tell you, I covered the approval in Virginia of the first ever at-scale fusion reactor. Dylan Allen, who I've had on the show in the past, who's been around a long time and works in the nuclear industry, said that story is bullshit. He said they're not even close to a working prototype yet, and they're talking about breaking ground. So I believe Dylan. And I still believe if you approved the project, maybe there's something we don't know. But the consensus of other people I've talked to in the industry is it's all fluff right now. It's not happening. But these small-scale reactors, this is existing tech. And I think if we are going to deal with the energy challenges of the future, we're going to have to go nuclear. And we're going to have to go nuclear in a big way. But maybe it's a big way in small, more distributed solutions other than just like big, you know, modern versions of Three Mile Island, let's say. There's been a concerted effort for it to happen over the years. And so much so, I mentioned I grew up in Jacksonville, Florida. So back in the 80s, 70s and 80s, there was actually during the 70s when the approval happened to build a nuclear power plant in Jacksonville, Florida, right on the St. John's River. And unless something happened I'm not aware of, you could probably still go there and look, and you see it looks like a big old school nuclear cooling towers right on the St. John's River. And yet, you know, I'm going to say Jacksonville wasn't a great place to live back then. There was a lot of freedom, but there were days you could barely breathe from smog. There was a huge paper mill, and blue smoke came out of the paper mill. You do with that as you will. There's a bridge that goes over the St. John's there, called the Matthews Bridge, and you got kind of a little teary-eyed and choked up when you drove over the Matthews Bridge, but there was a bridge closer to the mills that was much higher, and I'm sure it's still there, called the Hart Bridge. When you went over like that, I don't know, I was a kid. I was like, asked my dad, like, how do you not crash the car? Because your eyes would burn that bad. So nuclear power seems like a good option. Well, what they ended up doing, because all the eco-weenies came out and said, no, nuclear, it'll kill us all. It ended up being a cogeneration plant, coal. And they added coal to what they were burning on the St. John's, even though it looked like a modern nuclear plant. But I think you're going to see a lot more nuclear. I can only imagine, like, if aliens are real and they do observe us, the aliens watching us, like, going, these fuckers mastered the atom in the 40s. They had mass-scale deployable nuclear energy by the 60s. They've continued all these amazing advances, you know, by splitting the atom. And they're fucking around with windmills that have to be buried. The blades have to be buried while they're talking about saving the environment. They just have to mock us, right? But I do think we're about to see a whole new age of nuclear, and there's a reason. AI is not going away. AI will be integrated into everything. I think I'm going to do a show probably next week on the AI real disruption that nobody sees yet. It will be just like this little device I'm holding in my hand, and it will be in this little device. For those not on the video, it's a cell phone. I want you to think about how many things that if you're my age or older, you probably owned in your life at one time. Let's go back to like, it's 1988. How'd you listen to music? You probably had a boombox and a Walkman, and in the Walkman you put a tape. And if you were rich by then, maybe you had one of the first CD players. And I don't think anybody had a Discman yet in 1988. Maybe they did. I never saw one living in poor ass Schuylkill County, Pennsylvania at that point, right? So what did you do your math with in school? You had a calculator, a standalone calculator, right? And it's solar power, right? Like, I had accounting in high school. We used calculators. We couldn't use it in math class. We could in accounting. I also would just say this. Remember the whole, you'll never have a calculator everywhere you go? Yeah, I know we all do now with our phones. But I think if I could go back and talk to 1980s kids and tell them what to tell their math teacher is, teacher, can you tell me a job where I need to do math where they won't let me use a calculator at my job? Because I've never found one yet after 40-odd years since I got out of school. So whatever, man. I lost my train of thought there. Where was I? Anybody want to help me out? I just completely blew it there. I think I was talking about nuclear energy and somehow I lost it. Hey, I want to move on from there. I want to tell you about something else. And if somebody can remind me of what I was saying, I'll try to back up and fix it. But I also heard about something this weekend I thought you guys would want to know about. I used to listen to a show called Wheels. I'm not even sure it's called Wheels anymore. The guy that did Wheels was a guy named Ed Wallace. And if you're not from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, AI. Okay, thank you. AI. So, yeah, that's why they're going to do nuclear. So AI's not going away. Apple intelligence will be AI. The new Apple phones are being built specifically to run Apple's AI. Google will become completely AI driven. There's already the little AI synopsis and all. What do you even need a search engine for anymore? Like if you use ChatGPT on a regular basis, isn't it easier to go, I'm looking for more information about, tell me about it and give me some good websites to check out. Give me the latest art. Like you get way better results with AI than just a straight search engine. So search is dead. The way calculators are dead. How many other things are going to be dead because of AI? And for all the wailing and gnashing of teeth, the Bitcoin mining network is boiling the oceans. You know, nobody's bitching about how much energy AI uses. AI is going to put the Bitcoin blockchain to shame for energy usage. Probably 70% of increased demand, maybe more, over the next 10 years will come directly from AI. Every time you say, tell me about, and it just did, and it tells you, there's GPUs going, it's not free. What's his name? Sam from OpenAI said that right now ChatGPT loses money even on their paid customers at $20 a month. They're losing money. And somebody said, you knew that. And he actually engages with people on Twitter for real. And he like said, no, I did the calculations myself. And I really thought we were going to make money. And I said, maybe you should have asked ChatGPT to do the calculations for you. Or maybe you did. And since it's so bad at math for right now, maybe that's why it happened. But yeah, AI alone is going to drive the need to adopt nuclear. And everybody knows it. And everybody's accepted it. And inside government, all the stances have already, you can't see the public statement and the back-end policy are seldom linked, right? They may match at times, but they're not linked. The back-end policy toward nuclear has already changed because the lobbyists who tell the government what to do and the government listens are telling the government, this time truthfully, if you don't, there will not be enough power for this. And since the government wants all this shit for their surveillance shit and all, well, they're going to need it. But Jack, They can just power their own AI for their own surveillance. They don't need to power. No, you are going to be doing your own surveillance with your own AI unless you learn to master it and you learn how to use it without doing that. So, yeah, we're going to get a lot more nuclear energy in the next 10 years. And if you actually want lower emissions, whatever you mean by that, then you want nuclear. Then you want nuclear. But what about the waste? There's easy ways to deal with nuclear waste. Put it back where it came from, back in the ground. There's very simple ways to get rid of our nuclear waste. And we are not using Fukushima technology. Look what happened to Fukushima. That was built in the 60s, bro. I know people that work in the nuclear industry, and they'll tell you the minute you walk into any nuclear power facility in America, you just walked in 1965. Everything looks like a movie from 1965. All the components are from the 90s. Even if it was a new component, it still was designed in 1965. We don't have to do this anymore. And those plants work all the time, and failures are exceedingly rare, especially if you don't like put one on the coast of an island where earthquakes happen. That's probably not the best place for it. The other thing that's going to drive it is going to be space exploration. We are not going to go to Mars and keep people alive on Mars and run facilities on Mars with solar power. We are going to initially do a lot of that on the moon, because almost all the initial settlement on the moon is going to be on the South Pole, and they're going to be able to rim these craters with solar so that some of the solar is always on. That's how that, but they're going to use nuclear on the moon like crazy. They already can build nuclear reactors that, you know, would fit in this office that I'm sitting in. They can do way more than a 2-acre field of solar panels. Don't think they're not going to do that for space exploration, and those advances will get used to. Now I want to talk a little bit about when something is used for a thing, but a lot of technology gets developed from it. Space program is a perfect example. You don't realize how many things that we take for granted today that were developed by NASA through the space program. I won't get into it. Just accept that it's true. Even the Tang you drank when you were a child, right? Okay. And the astronaut ice cream that you bought on your field trip to the museum, if you were a kid back when they still used to take kids to museums instead of transsexual strip clubs for field trips. But Toyota's doing something in Japan that's really worth keeping an eye on. I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying we should pay attention to it. Toyota is developing what they're calling Woven City. Initially, I think it's going to be like a few hundred people. The plan is for it to grow like to 2,000. And it's like a company town, but like a modern experimental city. And so what they're trying to do is, and this obviously can be leveraged into the 15-minute cities where they control everything you do, everything you see, and when you can go and all that shit. So, again, I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying it's happening. It's right at the foot of Mount Fuji. It is a $10 billion project. And their goal is to try all the technology, self-driving vehicles, artificial intelligence, robots that clean your house. They literally are going to have fucking robots that are dog robots. If you want to take a walk with a dog, you can walk a dog robot if you don't want to own a fucking dog and clean up after a dog. I think that's kind of dumb. I think the real purpose of that is to learn more about robotics. And that's what the whole point is. They're bringing in like not to the brightest minds in Japan, the brightest minds in the world to all live and work together. They want to make like this genius percolator and throw all this technology at it in a way. There's two things they want to do. They want to be able to use technology. As long as nobody's going to die, it's okay to fail. Like, everybody knows it might fail. Nobody's going to get mad. Like, these are all people that are of experimental mindset. They know what they're signed up for, and we're going to try this thing. And if it doesn't work, it was funded by Toyota, so fuck it, right? And then we'll keep doing it, and we'll see what works. It's scary to say. That's a lot like the space program was in the 1960s. Like, we'll just do it and see what happens. Oh, we blew a guy up. Too bad. Let's do it again. Right? This is going to have a lot of things that come out of it. And my guess is it will look really good. I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying that the people behind this know what they're doing. They want to get as much tech advantage out of it as they can. But there will be other money. It won't just be Toyota's $10 billion. There will be other people throwing money at this thing. And it will get used to convince you that your town should become a group. Instead of one city, it should become a group of multiple 15-minute cities or 15-minute neighborhoods. Not every single thing about that is bad. Now, I think the propensity for abuse is such that it will be. But, I mean, if you don't want to live on a homestead, if you want to live in something more like a modern suburb, you have your little house, your little yard, you have your little garden, but you want to be able to like to walk to coffee shops, walk to your job and all that shit, you might be really happy living in a place like that. The problem is, again, the propensity for abuse. But this is probably the one, like they're building that wall in the desert in Saudi Arabia or whatever, like, I don't really give a shit about that. That's going to be a freaking hellscape, I believe, in the end, unless you're super rich. But because the majority of the people that live in that line, they call it, are going to be the people that do all the shit work for all the rich people that live there, and they're going to be caste systemed into their own little neighborhoods within this thing. If you don't know what I'm talking about, look it up. It's called The Line, and they're actively building it. You can see from satellites the footprint of it being carved out in Saudi Arabia. But this is going to be a little bit different. This is going to be the golden rice of smart cities. And some of you went, oh, I get it. And some of you went, what? Golden rice is this shit that the GMO seed makers came up with. It was this idea that children in parts of the world that are malnourished, even if they have enough food, they don't get enough vitamin A. Go blind. This is a real problem. This happens. So the GMO seed companies all got together, cooperated, and did under an open, like public use patent. Anybody can use it. Made this golden rice. And the reason they call it gold rice is it's really not gold. It's more like a yellow orange color. It's very high in beta carotene. So you grow the rice you would grow anyway. It happens to be orange. You feed your kids with it, and they don't go blind. And they used it for a lot of public relations wins, like 2008, 2009, 2010. Kevin O'Leary cited it on Shark Tank when a little girl told him. I think it was all set up, by the way, how dangerous GMOs were. And he cited it as being science and protecting people. No one has fucking grown this shit anywhere that actually feeds people where it's grown. It was a PR stunt. I don't think this is just a PR stunt, but one of the outputs will be a PR stunt. Look how this is. Look how great this is. There's no crime. Well, you're bringing in 2,000 extremely wealthy, intelligent people who all have a common ideology. Guess what? Doesn't matter what you have for city infrastructure, it's going to be low crime. You see what I'm getting at? Plus, you're in Japan, which is already remarkably low crime, but it's so low crime. And they'll have all these, you know, guy walking his freaking robot dog and shit. I don't have to pick up the poop. It's just like having a real dog. It even has an emotion chip, so it loves me or whatever, you know. And, well, I wish I could live there. But resident of Omaha, Nebraska, you could. Talk to your city council about turning Omaha into a smart city. Talk about turning Omaha into a group of 15-minute smart neighborhoods. Right, because smart cities and smart neighborhoods and 15-minute cities, that's going to have a negative connotation going forward, in America anyway, okay? But 15-minute neighborhoods, well, isn't it funny how propaganda works? How we can just change the phraseology just a wee bit, and all of a sudden something that sounded so terrible sounds so much better, like, nobody wants socialism, but what about democratic socialism, right? I feel like it's Lord of the Rings. Yes, we've had socialism, but have we had Democrat socialism? It doesn't matter. You get to vote for socialist policy A or B, but you still get socialism. Yay, we all lose, right? And so I think that we're going to see a lot out of this place. When it comes to like a town or a city, $10 billion ain't what it used to be. That's a lot of money. And you're going to get – it's not going to just be about money, right? Because there's going to be companies developing technology. This is like a new, like, world fair, but permanent. Like, it used to be, if you invented a new thing, the most important thing in the world to you, if it's a technology thing, get it in the world, get it featured in the World Fair. Growing up, I still remember advertisements in magazines featured at the World Fair, and it would be like a World Fair from like 20 years earlier, like from the 60s. This is what this is going to be. So they're not going to have to buy all the technology. There will be companies going, here, take our shit. Elon will give them free Starlink. You know that's going to – Elon will send some of the Tesla robots there. Elon will send them a boring machine to make a tunnel, right? Like, and that's just Elon. There is going to be a shitload of tech innovation thrown at this thing, and it will be worth keeping an eye on. And some very good things will come from it. Now, my special friends, my full retard libertarians, just said, Jack Spirko said 15-minute cities are good things. I don't know what to do to help you people. I really can't help you anymore. I'm done worrying about you. I'm going to probably stop even mentioning you anymore because you're not capable of nuance and understanding. Like, there are good things that we still have today that came from something as horrible as Nazi Germany. That doesn't mean Nazi Germany was good or Hitler was a good guy or he was really right. But have you ever driven a Volkswagen? Where do you think that came from? I'm just saying, right? So, or why do you think we have the interstate system that we have today? Do you know how we got the interstate system we have today? Dwight Eisenhower, as the supreme commander of Allied forces in Europe, when they finally took over Germany, looked at Germany's highway system and said, well, shit, we need this. And he's why we have it today. So you can have the most horrible shit still yield some positive things. And that's what I'm saying about, again, it's called the Woven City. And I'll add a link to the notes over here for you guys to take a look at it. Let's real quick go through some questions and comments here. Question, probably going to be completely unrelated. Oh, great. That's a good way to start. But what are your thoughts on the health of unflavored, full-fat Greek yogurt? Go nuts. If it's actually Greek full-fat yogurt, if the ingredients are milk and or cream and lactobacillus, and that's all that's on the label, all I would say is it's still got more carbs than I would be comfortable just chowing down on. But if you're not worried about carbs, go nuts. It's probably one of the healthiest things you can eat. But let me tell you a secret. It's not Greek yogurt. It's not Greek yogurt. It might be okay to call it Greek-style yogurt. What do I mean? If you go to Greece and you eat yogurt, it's made with sheep's milk. Let me say it again. If you go to Greece and you eat yogurt, it's made with full-fat sheep's milk. Go look at the macros between cow, bovine dairy and sheep dairy, and you'll see what I'm talking about when I say it's not the same thing. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying real Greek yogurt comes from a sheep. It is absolutely, it's like extra fat. And it's not the same as you can buy in a store. What I would tell you is if you really like yogurt, what you really want to do is buy one little thing of good quality, closest to Greek yogurt you can get. Make your own yogurt. And per gallon of the best quality milk you can get, whatever that is for you, add about a pint of heavy cream to make it even more fat. And yogurt making is so easy. There's no reason that anybody shouldn't be able to do it. And if you own a sous vide circulator, it is a perfect way to hold the exact temperature you want with your yogurt for as long as you want to. My other thing I will say about yogurt, I don't know if you've been around long enough to remember me talking about it, but I love yogurt cheese or Lebna. And this is where you take your yogurt, you put it in, I use flour sack towels instead of cheesecloth. They last forever and they cost less money. And so you put it in there, you tie it with a string, you hang it up. Like I hang it from a faucet in my sink usually and let it hang overnight. And all the whey will drip out of it. It will further ferment, get a little bit funkier and get even thicker. And man, I want to go make some of that. I haven't made any in a long time. That's one of my favorite things. And I love to make stuffed peppers wrapped in bacon with that. And the reason I like to make it is it doesn't melt. So it stays in the pepper. It's really delicious. What I like to do is take the yogurt cheese and about, let's say you have a cup of yogurt cheese, use about a third of a cup of really good quality sharp cheddar and mix it in and then stuff that with your peppers because it will hold on to the cheddar and let less of it out, but it'll give some of that sharp bite to go with the yogurt funk, and then it absorbs the grease from the bacon and the jalapeno. It's really good. Anyway, this comment, I think I highlighted this because I actually wanted to read it and I couldn't read it and keep going. And I don't know who he's responding to, but yet Ben Yoba said, when one Bitcoin is worth 100 million USD and you have a whole Bitcoin, you can afford fees and can even afford to run your own Lightning nodes and charge fees for your services. Well, you can do that if you own one Bitcoin right now. You can do everything you said there. You don't, and I'm going to have to say one thing here. If you're thinking about $100 million Bitcoin, get your head out of your ass, please. Please. Okay, we don't need to go that sensational, folks. Right now, people are still having a hard time getting their head around $1 million Bitcoin. I think it is highly probable that most of us will see $10 million plus Bitcoin in our life. But you have to start looking at what the market capitalization will be and how much market capitalization there is in the world as you start to move into that territory. $1 million Bitcoin will be the day that a Satoshi is a penny. A penny. Right now, a dollar buys about 1,000 sats. Yeah. So you can do the math and figure that out yourself, right? So $5 gets you right around 5,000 sats right now. And, of course, that changes day to day, hour to hour, minute to minute. But it's somewhere in that range. You get into that number and things start to really change about what Bitcoin is. Everybody thought it was 100,000. I always said it wasn't. I said that's just a step in the right direction. Even a million. I think, you know, you're looking at $10 million Bitcoin in the next 10 years. And if that's not a big enough number to make you excited, I don't know what to tell you. This is what I'll tell you about Bitcoin. I put out a post saying this today. Everybody's waiting for, like, all these new people that came into Bitcoin in the last 4 or 5 years. They're waiting for, like, a giant green dildo candle on the chart that goes to $1 million. And now I'm rich and I'll sell my Bitcoin and I can go off to say Watanabe or whatever. Yeah, it ain't happening. It ain't happening. And the reality is most of the people thinking that way, you don't have enough Bitcoin for that to change your life forever anyway. There's these people walking around, they have like $2,000 worth of Bitcoin. And if that happens, you're going to have like 20 grand. You haven't been in it long enough to actually be rooting for that yet. You'll find the longer you're in this grind, the slower you want it to go, I guess, until we get old enough, we're like, fuck, go, because I need it now, right? Like, the beauty of being young right now and mostly broke with Bitcoin is you have plenty of runway. And if you are 25 years old right now and you work for a company, about once a year, usually HR Karen will come out and have a mandatory meeting and everybody has to come in. And maybe it's not every year, maybe it's every other year. Or certainly when they change providers, a 401k financial liar will come in and HR Karen will tell you to listen to him and he'll tell you how if you put 10% of your income into aggressive growth mutual funds and ETFs starting now, that when you retire at 65 to 70, you'll be a multimillionaire. And what I'm telling you is if you're 25 years old right now and you will discipline yourself and save at least 10% of your money in Bitcoin, you can shorten that by 20 to 25 years. And if that doesn't get you excited, then you're not ready to build wealth yet. Being able to add 20 years of retirement to your life is something a lot of us that are in our 50s, we already lost that opportunity. When I was 25, we didn't have something like a Bitcoin. We certainly didn't have the mature version of Bitcoin that is a much safer bet today than when you think you wanted to get involved. And you never, if I would have known. No, you wouldn't have because no, you didn't have. You would not have. And most people who were early Bitcoiners, even me, we spent so much of that shit back in the day, we didn't hold all of it. If I held all of it, I would probably still be podcasting because I love it. I'd probably podcast 3 days a week. And it'd be like, hi, welcome to episode whatever of the Survival Podcast coming to you live from Jakistan. That's the truth. That's how much we burned through in the beginning because it wasn't a known yet. It was something we believed in. It's something we liked. It's something we wanted to happen. But it was also something like, well, I spent $10 on this, and I want to buy this gun. And this gun's like $600. And this $10 I spent is now worth $600. Why would I spend $600 of the money I'm going to earn next week when I could spend the $10 I put away last week? That's short-term thinking, but we all did it. You didn't have people like me. You didn't have a Bitcoin community like we have today with people telling you, focus on the long-time preference. So don't worry about $100 million for Bitcoin. You worry about stacking. And as far as you can afford to run your own Lightning node, you can run your own Lightning node now for less than a bar tab. Like, let's not be dumb about this. All right, Liberty Cast threw me a $4.99 super chat. Thanks for streaming today on probably the most important Liberty topic today. Not sure which one that was, but thank you for that. And hey, you paid for my DCA today. Thank you, Liberty. I appreciate that. Liberty Cast also asked a question. Will my mother be okay with gold and silver and the S&P 500? She will never do Bitcoin. I don't know. How much do you have? How much are you going to need? What are your finances? I don't know. I still own stocks. Okay? I still own stocks. I have money that's been in the stock market for a very long time, and that money now lives in the stock market. It's managed by somebody. You can probably figure out who it is. Okay? I have silver. I don't have gold. I have some gold. But when it comes to precious metals, most of my holdings are in silver. I'm not getting rid of it. Would I buy it today? Probably not. Probably not. I see those as two of my own self-insurance programs for myself in my retirement and for my wife if I get hit by a car or a tree or something. But I can't answer that question because if she has $100,000 worth and she's 50 years old and she's not stacking like crazy more into it, the answer is probably she's going to have a pretty meager retirement. If she has $1 million worth of that shit right now and she's 70, she probably can't outspend her lifetime. So that's something that's, you know, I would love to give you a more accurate answer, but I really can't. Like, that's something to sit down and map out a budget and say, do my investing objectives at a conservative estimate meet my planning for my retirement needs? And this is something we should do a show on someday. It's one of those boring topics, but you need to know. And most people won't do it because they already know they're not going to like the answer, right? Dan W., if you ever go to Southeast Idaho, check out the EBR-1 Reactor Museum, First Grid-Tied Nuclear Reactor. The Idaho National Laboratory has pretty amazing history. I will do that. Thank you for telling me. Let's see if there was anything else. Liberty Cast says, no, she's still working and she's 73, makes less than 43 grand. I would ask you one more thing before I go then. Estimate net worth rounded to the nearest 10,000. You know, and I'll tell you, you don't even have to because I know you may not want to give that out. She got $100,000. She's going to work the rest of her life. Maybe until she can't and like her last couple of years not working, like you can draw from that plus Social Security. She's got $500,000. You know, how long is somebody going to live? You know, you're going to live 93 would be 20 more years. You probably could make that work with $500,000 no matter what it's in at that point of your life, if like, is your house paid for and stuff like that. So her income is really not relevant to how much money she has. So I don't know. Anyway, I need to go ahead and wrap up, guys. Over 2 hours today. Typical Monday. We started late. We ran late. Covered a bunch of topics today. I really hope you guys enjoy shows like this. When I do get, I know more people show up when I talk about some of the doom and gloom and the blood and guts and the fire and brimstone. I still try to give you things like somebody saying thanks for the lizard story, like stuff like that. Like, look, guys, no matter how shitty things get, why do we do what we do? Do we do what we do so that we can, like, live under a rock? Like, if a nuclear Armageddon comes, we'll still be okay and we'll all live on roaches that grow on algae, right? Like, Like, that's actually from a book series called the Geodesy series by Piers Anthony. Isle of Women is the first book in that four-part series. And by the end of it, in the apocalypse, like, the number one protein source on Earth is roaches that are fed blue-green algae, right? Like, are we doing what we do so we won't be dead, but we're going to eat cockroaches that eat algae? Or do we believe that we can build an amazing life? Do we believe that right in the middle of the shit, we can build lasting businesses and lasting wealth to hand down to our heirs? Because if you tune into this show and you don't believe that, you're going to have a lot of cognitive dissonance. Because I will give you the blood and guts. I will give you the dark. I will give you the gloom. I will give you the doom. But I will give you the inspiration and the pathway toward your own happiness. We can't drag the world with us, but we don't have to go the direction of the world. With that, you guys have a great week coming up. I really hope it works out great for you. Hope you build a lot of things in your life this week. Remember, I got some workshops coming up. You can check the blog out and the show notes for that. We got a beef workshop at the end of March, about an hour north of me, and we got a composting workshop 2 weeks away right here at Nine Mile Farm. I'll catch you guys tomorrow with another Just Jack Show. Wednesday interview, Thursday expert counsel, Friday flashback, and we'll just keep driving on. We are back on our regularly scheduled programming.
Just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.